welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. We're here to talk about true killers. Okay, I guess. Yeah, it's episode 4 of 1984 of American Horror Story. I'm joined as always by Ms. Shadow Lovely and Slow Beef. Hey, what's good?
Yo.
Hello. I mean, this is the first time the title, like, I guess, like, I'm not going to say why, but, like, I guess the title makes sense. It's closer than the last one. It's closer than Slashdance.
I mean, a lot's better than Slashdance, to be fair, but you are right, yes. It is, yeah. It is much better than that one.
I will say, this episode is incredible because it has both of the things I've hated the most in this season in one episode. It's kind of badass. Like, I was like, oh, this two different things. One that's a twist and one that's just like a, come on. That is like absolutely outrageous. I hate this episode, man.
You know, it starts with a thing that bugs me for like a totally different reason, which is like, it does like this thing that usually with a flashback, they're like, okay, like, you know, 1970 or something. But this time it's like, they start with the word then,
you know,
and then later
the time.
Yeah. And later on when they come back to the, you know, to the current running story, the A roll, I don't know, you know, they go now, which like, first of all, it's 1984. So it's not now. But okay, but even so, like, you can't just switch that up. You've been doing hard dates and all that, like, before. Like, now it feels lazy at this point, where it's just sort of like
the name of the season,
yeah,
as an example.
Yeah.
You know what's crazy? Because the flashback they're going to show us, I guess it's because they didn't want to, like, hard stuck themselves in a timeline. Because, like, in this flashback, like, we're going to have someone we're doing a flashback in a flashback in this sequence, and they didn't want to, like, make us confused that it was like that time instead of when the flashback's actually taking place. It's who knows when this happened,
but like, when did they give a shit about any of that? You know what I mean? Like, this like whole thing has been a train wreck always, you know, and now it's like, well, wait, I don't want to paint ourselves into a corner. Anyhow, here's our real life serial killer slash character on our show. Like, what the fuck? Like, what?
I think that's actually, you know what, now that you're saying that, I think that's actually exactly why they didn't give it a date, is because it has to be within a year, because the thing that they flash back to, that Montana's going to flash back to, is exactly a year ago, according to when we saw Brooks' version of it. And then on top of that, Richard Ramirez wasn't killing people until like June or July of that year. So like, they couldn't be like, yeah, he was definitely active a year ahead of time. Uh-huh. We would never write something so ridiculous about Richard Ramirez, the real man.
God forbid, they take any liberties with Richard Ramirez, actual serial killer, right? Like, you know,
we wouldn't want to infringe upon canon, on canon Richard Ramirez lore. We wouldn't want to step on any toes or anything.
Oh, you!
But I don't know if you all knew this about real-life serial killer Richard Ramirez, but he sometimes gets overtaken with the power of dance. Like, not to get into but this opens on this completely ridiculous scene where it's like, then, and it's Montana leading a nighttime aerobics class. Richard Ramirez just walks in. Nobody really looks at him, even though I feel like you would. And
well, like, first he's like salivating at the window like the fucking child at the end of The Giver looking in at a Christmas dinner, just like, ooh, I need that.
Yeah.
And then he saunters on in.
He reads the sign that says Midnight Man Aerobics, which is like a men's only aerobics class that Montana teaches. And I'm like, insane. I'm like, is it happening at midnight? Like, are you guys doing some kind of like summoning ritual? What is this? Like, we're only men. We're doing aerobics. We're doing it to Rebel Yell. And it takes place at midnight. Like, these are the important plot points of this class.
And then, like, wildly, like, this one... Okay, I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit here, but, like,
Yeah, please, first describe what Richard Ramirez does when he walks in. I implore you.
It's like, what... Like, he starts, like, dancing, like, kind of just by himself, like, doing... Not even just aerobics, just getting into, like...
Kind of rubbing on himself.
Yeah, like, Rebel Yell and all... Yeah, which is, like, an odd... I don't know... He later claims to be really into rock and roll, which is because, like, I even feel like in the 80s, it was like a popular song, but also because it's a popular song, if you were really into music, it's probably not like that. You don't diss like Billy Idol. Like, come on, everybody's into Billy Idol in the 80s. You know what I mean? But it's like now, like somebody defending like Taylor Swift or something like that is my point. At any rate. Yeah. And then like, you know, Montana walks over and like she's just like, hey, you know what? Like your moves are terrible here. And if you're going to join my class, you got to pay for it. And he gets a little threatening, but she says, and I don't remember the name of the knife. She's like, is that a Buck 189? You have to need something better than that Buck 189 or whatever. Which, like,
that's what this is crazy for the record, because even knife people don't like know like the serial number of different types of Bowie knives. They don't like look at it and go like, ooh, that white elephant bone construction handle, that must be a Bowie 6785 or whatever. Like, fuck off, brother. No one says that. What are you talking? They ain't guns.
Also, she can only see the handle. It's like in a sheath. Like, I don't think you can, even if you are like some kind of freak who can like identify every single knife in the world, like, you'd probably need to see like at least part of the blade, because you don't know what's like from the handle down. So like, it could be anything under there. He could have made his own weird Frankenstein knife where he like broke off the bottom part and then put it on a different handle. Like, you don't know.
All you know is the tang status. You can see whether it's a through tang or not. That's all you get. You get tang and handle, nothing else.
Yeah, they're acting like gun people. They're like, this is like how gun people act. And I'm like, okay, well, that's not how knife people act. Also, secondarily, what am I supposed to glean from this? Like, Montana being like weirdly, like her special interest being knives isn't like anything. Like,
you know, well, the problem is too, like, because the finale of the last episode was like she's in on it with Richard Ramirez, which is now like, I guess they're just like, look, anything's on the table with Montana. We don't have to make her realistic at all or anything, because like, it's also like, hey, some stranger wandered into your Midnight Man aerobics class with a fucking knife. You know what I mean? Like, I don't care how into knives you are. That's not cool. You're not going to be like, oh, this is good. This is a good thing for me.
Also, kicker, I would describe the way he was like dancing around as somebody who maybe has taken a substance or two and just kind of wandered in, heard some music and decided they were feeling themselves, like someone who maybe took a little MDMA or did a little coke or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a random stinky, unstable man walks in, seems to be on a substance of some form and has like three knives strapped to him. And yeah, Montana's just like, cool. Hey, bitch boy, you gonna pull that thing on me, or are you just gonna fuck the floor or whatever? It's like, what are you talking about, Montana? This is a dangerous man.
She also like walked away from her class. Like, she was in the middle of teaching an aerobics class, and she just walked away from teaching it. If I was in that class, I'd be pissed.
And then she's like kind of like biting her lip, like she's all like turned on by like Richard Ramirez, real person. You know, it's like, I have to like exclaim every now and again just to remind myself what the fuck's going on here. But at any rate, and then this guy Rod is like, onion, like, come on, Montana, like, why are we listening to Billy Idol? How about some Cyndi Lauper? I want to get shredded. Which, like, I guess you can hear.
Yeah, he's like, I don't want to deal with this metal stuff. And it's like, okay, man.
It's Rebel Yell. Relax. It's a pretty like catch. Even if you don't like rock and roll, like, it's a catchy song, and it's like
a good song.
Yeah, it's good. Like, you can't, like, not be, like, tapping your foot to it. It's fine. It's a little, like, it's a little weird for an aerobics class, but, like, not that weird. Especially if, like, the theme is, like, Midnight Man aerobics.
Yeah,
like, it's 100%. Both for dudes. It's like dude wipes. Like, you're trying to market it towards dudes. So, like, it would make sense that she would have a rock and roll playlist instead of Cyndi Lauper.
Right, exactly. But, yeah, and then she walks over, and then I had trouble hearing this because the subtitles help. She's like, "Suck it, Rod," and he's like, "What'd you say?" I said, "Suck it, Rod," and then like he's like, "That's it, I'm telling whoever," and he leaves. And
I'm
then,
telling.
Yeah. So then, like, he leaves. So then we cut to the next scene.
Oh, and then Richard Ramirez is like, "Oh ho ho, I know what I'm gonna do.
Yeah,
exactly. I know what I'm getting up to.
The ladies love this."
But, like, this part... Yeah,
women love random violent acts from men. That's, like, their favorite thing, right, Liz?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's up there. Top three. Being stinky, number one. Poor hygiene, number two. Three, random acts of violence while I'm alone by myself at apparently like 1 a.m. in the morning at right. my workplace.
Yeah, and like, I get that they made it manorobic so that they could explain, I guess, like why Brooke is in the locker room by her, the women's locker room by herself here, right? But like, I don't know. It's still odd because like Richard, because she walks in and she sees like that, you know, Pat or Rod's body like up in the corner, like on the ceiling, like Spider-Man, strung up and eviscerated.
So this is also very fucking confusing because it cuts to like it was already midnight. And then it cuts to like a janitor cleaning up, which what? Why is a janitor there? Huh? Like that's the instructor's job to just clean up the studio before everyone leaves. What are you talking about? And like how much time could have possibly passed between the end of doing a little dance and then telling them all, okay, see you later, and leaving? It like cannot have been like more than a 15-minute window.
Yeah. Also like... Rod like probably stayed in the class if I had to guess, so like he didn't like leave early.
Yeah,
because if he did he would have gotten like I don't know accosted earlier. I don't know. Well, there's no timeline that makes sense for how Richard Ramirez had time to do this.
Like you have to like do some Metal Gear Solid shit, right? Where like the class ends, they all single file out. Rod's in the back. Richard has to like grab him by the throat, like without anybody else seeing, pull him backstage or whatever, kill him, get all his body up, all without Montana seeing any of that, and also before
which,
she
by the
gets
way,
to the locker room.
It's in the women's locker room, which is like the place Montana is. So like yeah. she probably went there early. Yeah.
But
her stuff's in right. there.
Well, what do you call it? So anyway, now that we've accepted, I think the timeline just doesn't work. Can't. But now she walks in like, and then like this guy is dead and up there. And Richard Ramirez is suddenly in the back. Just like, hey, what do you think of my work? You know, like my little romantic gesture here. And somehow, like, I guess he knew that she'd just be like, this is good stuff, thank you. Although...
good work, brother. It's like when your cat brings you, like, a dead bird. It's like, oh, good job, thank you.
But, like,
good job,
I guess...
Ramirez.
Montana, though, is the queen of mixed signals, I guess, because she slaps him, but then kisses him. You know, it's like, all right.
Never
like...
let him know your next move. Never yeah. let him know your next move. This is also, like... Yeah. The guy is like hung up. When we say he's like up in the corner, it's like not a low ceiling. It's like a pretty right. high ceiling room. And like, yeah. there's no ladder nearby. And he is like strung up. And like his like intestines yeah. are hanging down like he's a fucked up pinata.
Yeah.
Why did they not close
yeah,
the
like
studio?
He's like strung up and split open.
Nobody mentions yeah. this. No one mentions this murder like ever. No one's like, hey,
oh,
do you
yeah,
guys remember
think,
when
right?
like a really fucked up murder happened at this aerobic studio that we all work at? Does anybody remember that?
Well, Richard Ramirez is like, I'll clean this up, like he says later. But even so, it's like, even if he's like this awesome, like, I don't know, CSI avoiding whatever for whenever then was. It's also like what happened to Rod from class. I don't know. He just disappeared one day. Anyway, you know what I mean? Like, wouldn't the police even be, like, asking Montana, like, did you see this guy, like, you know...
The guy you had a visible conflict with in front of a bunch of witnesses? Yeah.
Yeah,
everyone in the class just said, he was wrong. Billy Idol's goated. Fuck that guy.
We're glad he's dead, actually. We were hoping someone yeah. would do this. We all hate that guy. Yeah.
Right.
Also, like, there's a... When it pans to, like... Richard Ramirez being like, do you like my work, m'lady? With all of the charisma of like a Discord moderator. She like looks back over her shoulder at the guy in the corner and it plays like the audio of him yelling at her as though we have forgotten in the last 13 seconds
right.
like who he was or why Richard Ramirez would have killed him for Montana.
Like, you suck this bad at writing, and you were looking down on me, the viewer. Like, you know what I mean? Like, then they have to play that audio clip from, like, 15 seconds ago. Like, that's who he killed. That's who... Like, I know American Horror Story. Like, get your shit together before you worry about me, okay?
Like, also, would it have mattered? Like, would it... I don't know. Would it have mattered who it was if he was just like, I... killed a random guy for you. Like, it seems yeah. like she would have kind of been into it no matter what. So
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, her response is just like, that's the most fucked up thing anyone's ever done for me, comma, I'm into it. Which, yeah, unbelievable response. The healthy response would be, I'm calling the police. I'm leaving. I'm going by Richard Ramirez. What's wrong with you?
Yeah. And Richard Ramirez, known lover of and protector of women, by the way.
Known feminist, Richard Ramirez.
Exactly. It's like, you know what? You know, like, I didn't like the way he was talking to you. And he dissed Billy Idol, rock and roll, which I'm like, okay, again, you're not in, that's not really being into rock and roll, but whatever, it's fine.
Also, you know. Beef, please, he was like, I said I'd protect you.
Also, like, when? When did you say that? Like, you only, you talked to her once for like 10 seconds, what the fuck are you talking about?
And then, like,
oh my God.
If you couldn't hate this all more... At one point during their, like, lovemaking or whatever you call it with the dead body just strapped there, I guess she got, like, blood on her feet from walking near the body because his foot fetish activates and he's, like, licking the blood off her feet, which is, like, okay, that's gross, not because of the foot thing, but because, like, what do you, like, why are we looking up Rod's blood? And I don't know. It's just,
Because we needed a scene of him licking Montana's toes, Slow Beef. I think it's pretty obvious that we all needed to see that.
Sorry, I apologize to guest director Quentin Tarantino for, like,
like the guest spot necessary. By Tarantino. Like, literally, they were like, yeah, it was a little weird that two episodes ago we alluded to the fact that Richard Ramirez had a foot fetish. What if we doubled down on it and, like, saw him do it with another person? What if, what if we really committed?
What if there was a payoff? Wait, what do you mean payoff? We do it twice. That's not what payoff means.
Yeah.
And if there was maybe a third time?
No!
we set it up by doing it, and then we pay it off by just doing it again. You know, a repeat payoff. What? That's not a thing? I don't know.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So then, we have to watch him lick the blood off of her toes. Also, why is she barefoot? Like, she didn't shower or anything. She was just, like, walking to the locker room to get her stuff to leave. Why are her shoes off? I don't know. Good for him.
Is crazy.
Yeah, good for him, I guess. Like, barefoot in the locker room of all places?
Yeah, I was
going
to say, dogs out in the locker room is fucking crazy. Yeah, that's how you get a fungus, bro. That's how you get a fungus. Careful.
It was the 80s.
So,
yeah. Because this, if you're thinking this can't get worse, of course it does, right? You want to go into it, like, because
So now we understand what we get the reveal of what Montana meant when she said, "What do you mean she isn't dead yet?" So the big reveal is, hey, you remember Brooke's wedding, the jealous groom who, like, shot a guy because he thought Brooke was cheating on him with the guy? It turns out the guy that got shot was Montana's brother, who she loved so much, the most. It's weird. It's weird that she decides that the groom shooting him means it's Brooke's fault. Like, Brooke didn't like this. So Montana essentially is assuming or claiming that, like, oh, she did cheat on him with my brother, which means it's her fault that my brother got shot. To which, like, damn, way to take away your brother's fucking agency.
Yeah, not to mention, it doesn't matter whether or not she actually did sleep with him. That guy was going to shoot him either way. Like, he had already made up his mind. He was going to do it regardless.
Just for folks at home, this is really convoluted. So just to say it again, like, Brooke's husband, or what, a groom, like, at her wedding, the would-be husband, right? Like, thinks Brooke's cheating on him because she slept over that guy's house, and he shoots that guy, and that guy is Montana's brother. So, like, it doesn't make any, because, like, when you, I'm first seeing it, even, like, seeing it, I'm like, wait, the groom was her brother? And I'm like, and then I had to think, like, no, it's that, right? Because you need, like, almost like the whole
best
photographs
man.
And the string to, like, pull it all together. It's so odd.
It's really weird.
Yeah, like, there's no real way to justify it. And also, like, I don't know. I feel like if someone was, like, your brother or your groom's best man, like, you maybe had seen her at some point, like maybe
like they have Montana be like, my brother is the only person in the entire universe who's like super important to me, and like he was like the one person in the entire world who like didn't think I was a fucking weirdo. And then she's like, he was the best man at this wedding, which in that flashback from Brooke's POV, she describes the best man as being her fiance's like best friend, like for like a long time. And I fail to like believe that you would be that close, like that group of people would have such a close proximity to each other that Brooke would have no fucking idea who Montana was upon meeting her. And, like, interacting with her, yeah. like, at all. Because Montana's not, like, a forgettable person. Like, Montana's a pretty memorable person. I don't think that there would be, like, it's not impossible, obviously. But, like, for the level of closeness between Montana and her brother, and then her brother and Brooke's fiancé, there's no way. There's no way that Brooke, because Brooke trusted her brother enough to spend the night with him. So that means that's a level of trust that, like, goes a bit beyond just, like, casual acquaintance or, like, friend of my fiancé. Like, that is a level of trust that goes beyond just, like, yeah, I don't know his last
name. That's, like, extended family.
Exactly.
So, like, the way that he would, like, or the way that Brooke would, like, somehow not know who Montana was upon meeting Montana. Also, like, how did Montana orchestrate her meeting them at the aerobics place and then eventually becoming a part of the friend group and then going to summer camp?
Well, and you know what, even all that, like, it, the wild thing about all this is, like, she has this, like, revenge that she wants to carry out against Brooke, but luckily for her, a serial killer wandered into her aerobics class that she could, like, I guess seduce into a plot to kill Brooke. Like, that's a pretty fucking lucky turn of events, you
know?
What
a shame, too, that she got stuck with Richard Ramirez, because as demonstrated, like, through all four episodes of this television show so far, Richard Ramirez can't finish a single quest he's given. Like,
he sucks at killing people.
He's really bad at it. Like, just, he got Rod somehow. Maybe the element of surprise. Maybe he was just feeling himself because of the aerobics class, and he was just like all jacked up on Billy Idol or something. Maybe the love of Billy Idol was enough to, like, get him to kill Rod, but the love of these women and their feet, not enough to get him to follow through on any other quests he's given.
So the other thing, too, we were mentioning, like, the closeness. So, like, the closeness of the groom and the best man in this case was, like, that close that they considered themselves best friends, and they were, like, he was willing to have, you know, bride-to-be be there. And yet, Montana blames Brooke and not the groom who shot him. That's crazy to me. That seems so much like it would just be like, yeah, it was, yeah, the man who got jealous of my brother who shot him, like, allegedly his best friend, killed him with a gun and then killed himself. Like,
yeah, like, that, Montana, that is the, would she
why
not,
would you blame Brooke? That's crazy.
If that was her, like, brother's best friend for a long time, allegedly, like, how would you not know that he already had, like, a weird proclivity for, like, doing that? Like, being a weirdo, like, a violent weirdo who, like, got really jealous, because that's not a thing that you just, like, develop one day. That's, like, a thing that's, like, a trait, a characteristic that, like, you have for a while. Because, like, Brooke even says it, like, yeah, he was just kind of like this TM. Also, like, I could be misremembering because this show's fucking stupid, but, like, didn't Brooke say when she met Montana and the gang, like, didn't she say something akin to, like, oh yeah, I just moved to town, like, kind of like cagely, to, like, insinuate, like, yeah, I'm trying to get a fresh start, etc., etc. Because we see her, like, in her apartment, like, unpacking her stuff, basically, and, very sparsely. So, like, the implications that, like, Brooke came from somewhere else, not where Montana is, which is, I think, L.A., they forgore, while they were writing these characters, they forgot that Brooke came from, like, a different city.
Yeah. Well, after that, we have our intro, and we are back to quote-unquote now, the main story, back at it again. Montana is getting mad at Richard Ramirez because Brooke is still alive, and then, oh my god, immediately someone says something that's stupid, which is, Montana explaining, hey man, hurry up, Mr. Jingles, the real actual killer is here. And Richard Ramirez, who was told explicitly by Margaret, hey, I need you to go kill Mr. Jingles, who's here and real and a guy, is like, yo, you're telling me Mr. Jingles is here? Holy shit, that guy's famous.
That's my
oh
boy.
My God, I gotta do that. Oh my God. And it's like, Richard, pay attention. This is the second time you've been told about Mr. Jingles being
here. Two women have given you objectives after offering feet, and you have somehow forgotten both objectives simultaneously. Like, keep your eye on the ball, Richard. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Maybe this is how he realized he wasn't that in defeat. It's like, it's not enough of a motivator for me anymore.
Yeah, he keeps forgetting. He keeps forgetting that he was given, like, the promise of toes. And then, like, he just kind of backs off. That's the other thing. Is like, he got, like, the motivation, quote-unquote, from Margaret via toes because he was mad about a ghost. Like, he's really... I keep making the joke, but he is, like... so easily distracted. Like, you can literally, unironically, jingle keys, and he will be like, oh, I've forgotten what I was doing, actually. Oh, shit, hey, is that a fucking ghost? And then he'll, like, get mad about it and go, like, try and get... Like, Richard,
no.
you're doing
Satan
something.
Let me kill a ghost.
Yeah, you're doing something, buddy. Focus.
Maybe, you know, like, sometimes in, like, prequels when they show, like, someone who's, like, a hired killer or something and they're, like, all bumbling and it's, like, this is where they cut their teeth and learn. Like, maybe they're doing that, but with Richard Ramirez, who is a real person.
The real man.
I mean, yeah. So it's extra inappropriate, but I don't know.
The Mandalorian and baby Richard Ramirez.
Except for it's Mr. Jingles instead of the Mandalorian and baby.
Oh, God.
Like, yeah, oh, like he's going to take him under his tutelage, like Qui-Gon Jinn, but it's Mr. Jingles.
Also, why would Richard Ramirez, like, A, know who Mr. Jingles is, and B, be excited about him? He wasn't a serial killer. He didn't do serial killer stuff. He did one, allegedly, mass murder on one day. Like, that's not the same thing, Richard Ramirez. It's not, like, I don't know, whatever. He does have a kind of funny line. He's like, because... Right. He's like, Mr. Jingles is here. And Montana is like, yeah, I watched him kill two guys. And he goes, two guys? What is he, a ninja? And I'm like, it's pretty funny that Richard Ramirez is impressed at someone actually managing to kill two people, given that he's fumbled every single one.
I thought she was saying she saw him and he was two guys. And she was confused about the guys masked up. And I was like, that makes sense to be like, what is he, a ninja? Is he doing Naruto splitting into guys? What
I
the
thought
fuck?
That too. Like, oh, is he like teleporting like a ninja?
She said he gutted two guys, and she's talking about because she saw him kill the teens dressed as him. So like she's talking about them. And Richard's like, you can kill two guys at once.
Stupid. I think I'm the same amount of stupid as Richard Ramirez.
Oh, no.
I was just like, yeah. It's he was two guys at once? What? That doesn't make no sense. What are you talking about?
Richard Ramirez writing like a Santa letter, but to Satan, because it's like almost spelled the same way, being like, please let me kill two guys. I've been very bad all
killed
year.
Two guys with a little house between them? Okay. But yeah.
Oh my God. Richard Ramirez, bumbling oaf arc. Yeah, he's excited, I guess. Like, he literally has not completed a single task he's been given. Like, once. If you think about it, if I'm Montana and I'm sending Richard Ramirez, which is an insane sentence to say, to kill a lady or a girl who, like, I blame for my brother dying, which is already a pretty convoluted plan, I'd be pretty pissed if I found out that girl beat his ass, not once, but two times. I'd be like, you know what? Never mind. Fucking mind.
I feel like even Richard Ramirez might have been like, wait, though, it's not really her fault. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You tell her the whole thing, but...
Also, like, I feel like given, like, the characterization they're giving Richard Ramirez, I feel like he's more likely to, like, sadly approach Montana and be like, I don't want to chase this girl anymore. After getting his shit rocked twice with a frying pan and a boat oar, I think he'd be like, I don't think I want to kill this lady anymore for you. Can I kill somebody else instead? Please. Ugh. Yeah. So Richard Ramirez is excited.
Yeah, we cut back to Trevor and Xavier taking care of Chet, who has been impaled in a punji pit. He has like a full sepsis hole through him. It's like no good. Xavier hits him with the like, oh, it's fine. Trevor knows all sorts of medicine stuff. And Chet like dies immediately. And like full on dies. I just want to be clear here. He dies. He dies of blood loss and shock. He does not die of an overdose. He does not die of anaphylactic shock or some kind of allergic reaction. Well, anyway, we saw that one scene in Pulp Fiction where they stab a lady with a needle and she wakes up and goes, oh, and everyone's scared. And we were like, what if we did that? What if we did that? I know it's like not right, but like, check this out. I found an epinephrine needle. I'm going to stab him in the chest with it. And then he's going to wake up a second later and go, oh, it's going to be great. So that happens. that exact thing takes place.
I don't know when like media decided that like, epinephrine pins were the same as like a defibrillator, because they're not. In case you're curious, they're really super fucking even, not. They're like extremely not.
For the record, even defibrillators are not like what they show. Like even those are like not instant. Like your heart stopped, this will start it up again. Like it's a specific thing. Like it's at a rhythm. This will kind of like fibrillate it back, whatever, you know. Like. But that's it. Like, so, but even then, epinephrine's absolutely not going to help here. This guy has a hole through him. Like, a spike that was there.
It doesn't make more blood go into you. It doesn't, like, put blood back in your body. Like, you're pretty posed.
Maybe, like, it would make your heart beat a lot faster, which Chet says that, which would pump. Yeah, it would pump it out more. It would kill you a lot quicker, really.
To get the blood out of you quicker. Yeah.
I guess you get to suffer a little more, right? Like, maybe, like, good shot.
Generally speaking, do not give people like adrenaline analogs that do not need them. That is not just like medicine in general. Don't give it to people who don't need it, because a lot of times it'll be like bad for them.
Yeah. Left 4 Dead was like, if you inject yourself with epinephrine, you can run really fast. That's also not true.
That's
the media.
True. Oh, wait, that's not?
Well, I mean, not like in Left 4 Dead where it makes you like the Flash. It doesn't give you like super speed. You can run at your regular speed, but just, like, you're not going to run like 30 miles an hour if you inject yourself with epinephrine.
Feel like I'm going faster?
It should. Yeah,
will you will like feel. You will absolutely feel like you're going faster, but you're just going to run at normal speed. Cool.
Well, I think it should be realistic, like Max Payne, where it's like, oh, I'm bleeding, but painkillers, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, pain and damage are the same thing. We'll just do that. That's fine.
Yeah, to be fair, in Left 4 Dead, you do also just raw dog, like, aspirin out of a bottle, and it, like, heals your mortal injuries. So, you know, you take those where you can.
Going Dr. House mode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Don't inject yourself with an EpiPen to restart your heart. I've seen it in so many. I can't even blame this show for it, because I've seen it in so many shows and movies. Like, that's not how it works. I don't know why we decided in fiction that that is how it works, when you could just be like, defibrillator.
In film, there's a very easy answer, and that answer is Pulp Fiction did it, and it looked fucking sick, but they don't want to have their characters do heroin, so they want to have the cool thing, but they don't want their characters to be on heroin first, which is like, that you really can't get both at the same time, so that's how they try to get both at the same time.
You'd think that they would, since they're so like dedicated to making sure that we know that these characters are always on drugs, which, in case we didn't mention at the very beginning of this episode, before Montana starts teaching her aerobics class, she does coke, because this show wants you to remember that these characters are constantly on coke. It would make more sense, like, literally, because it doesn't make any sense at all. It would make more sense if, like, Trevor was like, wait, I know what will wake him up. And he pulled out a little thing of cocaine and put it under Chet's nose and was like, this will
that
wake him
so
up.
That would be so funny.
That would be pretty funny,
they'd
honestly.
They'd play the fucking Popeye the Sailor Man song as he just pops up.
Yeah. Chet is not only going to wake up and be not dead anymore, but, like, they're going to leave him alone in a minute and, like, over the maybe 20 minutes they're gone, he's going to have like a recovery health potion that's going to slowly over the 20 minutes completely like invalidate his mortal wound.
Yeah. Like, that's the most, like, that's the weirdest part of all this. Is like, Nachet's fine, which is like, he absolutely isn't. Like, there's, it just doesn't work. I'm sorry.
Grew more blood.
You can't put a log through somebody and then have them get better without going to a hospital. I'm sorry. That's just, I don't make the rules. Like, you fully put a log through a man. He doesn't get to just be better now.
Right.
That's not how that works. Yeah. Little too much.
Thank you for the medical advice, American Horror Story.
Yeah. So Chet mentions that, like, hey, Ray told me he killed a guy and then fucking ran off and abandoned me. What a fucking piece of shit. And Xavier just goes, oh, man, that's way worse than doing, or that makes me feel way better about doing porn. And then he goes, wait a minute, I did porn. That guy Blake had a car. We should go get that car.
I love Xavier. Much.
I'm sorry. I love Xavier.
Yeah.
He kicks ass. I love him.
Yeah, after the rampant character assassination of Montana by the cowards Falchek, now Xavier is definitely top one character.
My best friend, yeah. Xavier's my sweet son, who's very funny and also very stupid, but parentheses positive. Yeah, the thing that he was so afraid of his friends finding out, he just blurts out, like, porn? Blake! He couldn't have just, like, in his mind been like, oh yeah, porn, Blake, and then been like, guys, that guy who was at the showers, I bet that guy had a car. He's like, there's porn, like so many, I did porn.
There's so many other ways to get there too, right? Because they could have just said, like, you know, it's like, wow, like, Ray killed, like, and then, you know what I mean? Like, they could have mentioned Blake in any other way, and instead it's just like, yeah, that's better than the porn I did. Wait a minute. That reminds me, that guy had a Cadillac. Like, all right.
And
I guess.
I would like to point out, like we all hypothesized, no one gives a shit that Xavier did porn. No one even says anything about it. They're just like, right, that car. That is a good point. Like, they don't even, like, mention it. They're like, yeah, okay. Sure.
Chet's got way more to worry about, really, anyway, but, you know, then the plan is like, okay, Xavier's like, I'm going to go to the Cadillac that I just remembered. Trevor's like, I better go check on Margaret. So Chet, we're going to leave you here now that you're recovering with epinephrine. Here's some medical scissors to like defend yourself with. Like those scissors that they have in like a nurse's station that are like all kinked and cut through clothes and aren't sharp, you know, which
basically,
I guess
basically safety scissors for lack of a better like comparison, safety scissors.
Like, get the I know Mr. Jingle's just a guy, but like this guy's bleeding out. Give him something. I don't know, whatever. So, but that's fine. And they cover him with a little cat like blanket too.
They tuck him
like
in.
It's really pathetic, but yeah.
They don't even cover his face. They tuck him in. Like they were one step away from kissing him on the forehead and being like, "We'll be back." Like you'd think the blanket would be like to hide him so Mr. Jingles wouldn't see him if he came into the building. But no, they just tucked him in so he'd be comfy, I guess? Question mark?
And, like, pacing was never this show's drug suit, but it is pretty funny that Trevor's like, I'm gonna go find Margaret, and then the very next scene is when he's like, Margaret, there you are! And he's just like, there.
He's really good at it. Trevor's really good at finding people.
Especially Margaret. Like, he's all, like, it's gonna happen again later. Like, I better go see Margaret. Oh, there you are. Like, it's okay. Like,
huh, so, well, that was easy.
Right.
She isn't like somewhere where you would expect Margaret to be.
She's in the middle of an intersection in the woods later on too. And it's just like, oh, hey, what's up? Just like outside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like he finds her twice this episode, just like really quickly. Like he just knows where she is. The second time he finds her, at least she's where I would expect her to be. This time she's by the boys' cabin looking at like the dead teens who were dressed as Mr. Jingles. Like that's not where I would first look for Margaret, I don't think. I think I would look for her at her house, which is on premises for some reason. Trevor's just good like that.
And then, like, and he's like, Margaret, we're getting out of here. And she's like, I can't leave. There's a bus full of kids that'll be here tomorrow morning. And I have a gun. And it's like, but Margaret.
And I have a gun.
Yeah. But before the guy says, Margaret, you could call the police. Like, we could go somewhere else and get more people. You don't have to, like, do your last stand here, you know? And we'll learn there's more going on. Well, we already know. But, like, you know what I mean? It's still like, yeah, I don't think that works. But Trevor...
Oh, and don't worry. Yeah. The other things going on won't make this make any more sense either. Because, like, he is still, like, a big man walking around killing people willy-nilly. So there's, like, no amount of twist that makes her decision as somebody who, you know, seems perfectly innocent. Like, why would she not want other people defending her? Like, no one has any inkling other than... This is the murderer escaped from the asylum and is coming back to finish his last victim. Like,
I do.
This is so clear cut.
I do really like that every time someone's like, Margaret, we're in big danger. Jingles is here. She's like, I got that fucking thing on me. Yeah. I got that dog in me. I keep that thing on me. Like, it's fine. I don't give a shit. She like literally is like, I don't give a shit. I have a gun. And I'm like, you know what? Hell yeah, brother. Like, keep that energy up, queen. I wish more people had that energy in a horror movie of, like, don't give a shit. Have a gun. I'm fine. That's just a guy. I have a gun. It's fine. Yeah. But, like, she's, like, very adamant that, like, no one's gonna mess up my summer camp opening? Question mark? Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Especially when we find out what the twist is. It's like, okay, weird that you, like... We're so into the summer camp, I guess. But yeah.
It really is.
Trevor's like, all right, bye, I guess. Yep. Have fun with your gun.
See you later.
I did my part.
Yeah.
He's like, I tried.
I mean, honestly, I respect it. Sometimes you talk to somebody and it's clear they have made their mind up and you are just going to be wasting your time trying to convince them. And I think Margaret responding to the guy who tried to kill you is here with, I have a gun, I'll be fine, is just like, all right, lady, best of luck out there.
I'd be enough like, to worry about.
I'd be like, you know what? You do seem like you've got it handled, actually. Good luck. Have fun.
I have to compete with Richard Ramirez in a pussy eating contest, so I have enough on my plate. Don't worry about it.
I will win. Without question, yeah. I absolutely will win. Also, I don't think we mentioned it before. I would like to retroactively go back to the very start of the episode where we are revealed that Montana actually fucking hates Brooke and wants her dead. Hey, Montana, why did you make out with Brooke? Or try to? That was, like, a weird side quest you did for, like, no reason.
Oh, yeah, I was wondering that before that you mentioned it.
Like, that was just for the love of the game.
Funny.
Yeah.
It's funny. Yeah, she thought it'd be funny.
Which, gotcha. Honestly, I hate that Montana, we have to root against Montana. Because, like, pretty funny bit of her being like, oh, I'm sorry about the sad story you just told me. Do you want to kiss about it? I know I secretly hate you, but I do want to make out like a little bit.
And then the big reveal, nobody even grabbed my boob at Sam Goody. That was a lie. Like,
yeah. You know,
but
that's the biggest twist revealed thus far. Margaret also, in case going back to where we are currently, Margaret does like a weird thing that doesn't matter, even given the thing we're gonna find out at the end of this episode. She like draws like a weird like Catholic cross on the Jingles mask with blood, which is nothing for nobody. Like truly. Yeah. Like truly after, nothing for no one.
Yeah, after what's his face leaves, he's just like, oh, you know what, while I'm here, here's this is this anything?
If there's anything Christians love, it's putting bloody crosses on random things, especially if it's like indiscernible whether or not the cross is upside up or upside down. Right. Awesome. They love that shit. Can't get enough. If you put it on fire, even better. It's like so crazy for her to do.
I think they were trying to evoke like is it like Ash Wednesday, the like thing where people put the ash on the forehead? Yeah. But yep. I'm like, yep, that yep. doesn't. That's nothing. You doing it to the Jingles mask like is nothing. Like it's literally nothing. It means nothing for anybody.
It might be what's that anointing thing they do with the holy water where they like kinda like they can put that over your head, I guess.
Like
I
feel like yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it's just random crap because it doesn't there's no like analog thing for like they don't that dead body or that mask is not really anything to her per se, you know what I mean? Like there's no, and even if it were representative Jingles, there's nothing she's doing that like, works for that. You know what I mean? Like, she's not, let's say, asking for forgiveness by doing that. That'd be more like you're bestowing it, but you'll there find out there's no reason for that. So, whatever. It's just so random. I think it's just a reminder, like, she's religious, by the way. We didn't forget. And it's like, okay, thank you.
Yeah, in case you guys forgot, she loves Jesus.
Right. Then, like, then the wild stuff happens, too, because Xavier runs into Chef Birdie, which is what the Amazon X-Ray calls this character, you know, the lunch lady here. And she's sitting there at, like, midnight, completely oblivious, I guess, to everything happening here, making sandwiches.
Cause this is insane. Yeah, and, like, when we say making sandwiches, we mean taking a slice of white bread, putting a piece of bologna on it, putting a piece of cheese on top of that, putting a piece of bread in it, and then wrapping it up, which is just, like, not a thing you really need to do that much of in advance, and also not a thing you have to do at, like, 1 in the morning the night before.
Right.
That's, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that sandwich, like, was for her, and she just didn't want to seem, like, naughty for eating a sandwich at 1 a.m.,
Well, it's weird because, like, also she's making a bunch of them, and then Xavier's like, hey, what are you doing here? Or no, he's like, you don't understand, he's trying to kill everybody. Like, he explains it the worst way possible of just, like, he's here killing people. To which, like, it's a little understandable that Birdie's like, I don't know what you're talking about, I'm making sandwiches. Except Xavier's also got all blood on him and shit. Like, there's
That's the kicker, is someone stumbles in, clearly panicked, looking wounded, covered in blood, and says, he's gonna kill me, he's gonna kill all of us.
Yeah.
You immediately need to take what that fucking guy says seriously. Like, whether or not it's nonsense afterwards, you can figure that out later. That's a thing you can solve in post. But, like, you need to listen to this guy right now.
Yeah.
And you need to listen to what he is saying to you, because it is... If not relevant to you, probably very relevant to him.
Yeah.
So you should, like, let him, listen, please.
At least hear him
and
out.
Instead, Birdie's like, Birdie's just like, shut the fuck up, sit down, have a sandwich.
Have some, like, bologna.
No. Right. Yeah, enjoy a bologna. That'll heal your gaping chest wound.
I know. Yeah, you'll be fine. There's homesick kids coming that I have to tend to, which is like, which only sandwiches can help with.
And,
like,
they need bologna.
Also, I just want to be clear, Chef Birdie is sold as, like, kind of a lunch lady or whatever who just kind of, like, slaps food together. She is not being treated as some, like, five-star chef who, like, loves her ingredients and understands everything about her work. She's not some mythical chef. She's, like, just a lady who's making bologna sandwiches to pay the bills.
And apparently she's been doing that for, like, a long time. Like, we find out in a few minutes that she's been doing it for, like, a really long time. And, like, this is not her first rodeo. So it's kind of crazy that, like, she's had all this time to perfect her craft. And she's like, yeah, I love making 45 sandwiches at 1 a.m. That's me. That's Chef Birdie. That's my job. She is the only other staff member besides Xavier and the other counselors. So, like, I guess that makes sense that she'd have to do her prep work in the middle of the night since she has no help.
And Donna.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and Donna. Yeah. A.K.A. not Rita.
Well, it's weird, too, because she's like, you know, these kids are going to be homesick. And there's nothing a homesick kid like than, like, a sandwich made by someone else. Like, not really the way you like it or anything. But, like, and then all of a sudden, though, Mr. Jingles approaches. And we know that because, A, keys are jingling, so ipso facto the killer's here, and then also because he's the worst killer, his silhouette is, like, right outside the window, and Xavier's like, oh my gosh, and, like, jumps on there. She's at, like, a long, like, table, like a cafeteria table, so he goes under that, and then, like, Jingles walks in, and Birdie's like, oh hey, you know, you, what's going on, you know, and then, like, you know, she's still fine with it. You know, like, now he's, like, presumed, like, he's supposed to be in an asylum. And she knows this because she's like, did they let you out? And he's like, no, not really. And she's like, well, how about a peanut butter and jelly? I never forget a sandwich order. Like, why are they making him so unintimidating? I swear to God. Like,
he's like, yippee, yeah, like, I love a PB&J.
Yeah, and he's like, yeah, sounds good.
Like, what do you think would be, like, a hard sandwich order? Like, big
Yappalino?
I do love a meatball sub, so I'm biased towards that being the correct answer. Like, but, like,
Like Jason Voorhees walks into Subway and points at something on the menu. Like, yeah.
What do we think? Yeah, is he just like cold cut trio? It reminds me of my work.
They don't have that anymore, Jason. They only have the cold cut combo. And yeah. He just kills everybody inside.
Like, you want any veggies? He just like stares at you.
He wants the seafood sensation that got discontinued like 12 years ago.
Just points at every sauce in order and you go, you want this one too? And he just nods.
On the meatball sub that already has marinara on it.
Or you, and it's also got ranch and Italian dressing and buffalo sauce.
And you put sweet peppers on, you move on, he like taps the glass. Like, all right, yeah, more sweet peppers. Fine, you got it, Jason.
Can't fucking stand this guy. I hate it when it's Friday the 13th.
I hate it when it's Thursday the 12th and he needs energy for tomorrow.
He's getting juiced up, eating his meatball sub, his $5 foot long.
Yeah, so, like, I'm not taking that coupon. It's all wet. Just take the fucking stuff.
It's also just like a crudely written piece of paper that just says coupon.
So like, it's one of those 5-6 get the 7-3, but it's like all ripped up and fucked up. And like, I don't know that. I guess.
So she offers him a PB&J after saying, "I never forget a sandwich or a big man." And then Mr. Jingles just sits down and is like, "Okay, peanut butter jelly time. Hey, Birdie, you want to tell everyone your backstory?" And she goes, "Okay." And so she basically says, like, "Yeah, I used to be the person who made sandwiches here, which is why I know who you are and what your order is. And yeah, I heard Margaret was opening the place back up, so I figured I would come up here and help her get over it," which is like an unbelievably crazy logical leap. Like, you might think having somebody who was there in the past would in fact be the worst thing for helping someone move on, is have like, "Oh, there's that lady that was there when I got fucking murdered."
And the hubris to be like, "I can help you move on trauma by making sandwiches for the kids at your camp." Like, get the fuck out of here, Birdie.
Yeah, by like not interacting with you and instead just doing my old job.
Incredible. And then, like, you know, in the most goddamn it, what are we fucking doing here minute, right? At one point, she pushes the sandwich over the table, and he pulls out his giant knife, and the music swells, and he cuts the fucking sandwich in half, which, like, just shut up. You know what I mean? That's like, And he does
one. It's even worse than that, Slow Beef. It's fucking worse than that. He cuts the crusts off, and then she makes a comment of, like, "You never did like the crusts." And it's like, can you make this guy any fucking softer, bro?
He eats the sandwich completely fucked up, too. He eats the sandwich in, like, the most fucked up way possible. Like, he's never eaten a sandwich before. He just kind of, like, pushes the whole sandwich against his mouth and then, like, into his mouth.
You might as well just have him go, "I'm sorry, I have peanut butter on the roof of my mouth." You know what I mean? Like, just fucking enough with Mr. Jingles. Like,
he, like, complains. He complains that it's the wrong type of jelly. He's like, "This is grape jelly. I like strawberry jelly. Does this have high fructose corn syrup in it?" Yeah. What a cool scene.
Like, if Xavier just came out and just like, "Dude, you're an idiot. I'm done here," and then ended the season, I would be like, you know what? I kind of get it. Like, it's a weird, abrupt ending, but yeah. No.
He loves PB&J.
So,
and also, he cuts it with this knife that he's killed people with. Like, yum. I mean, he's not that gross, right? Like, you know, I mean, this has been in organs and shit. Like, you know, like, maybe wipe it off first. I don't know. Whatever.
So Xavier's under the table and he drops a flashlight and it hits the floor and makes a little noise. And immediately Mr. Jingles goes, "Ruh-roh," and leans under the table and like sees Xavier. And Xavier, my sweet, stupid boy, does not start running. The second he realizes he has dropped the... He waits. He waits until Jingles looks down, and then he's like, "Uh-oh, it's running time!" Doesn't get away. He grabs Xavier, and then it's so confusing, because, like, Birdie picks up, like, a hammer to hit Mr. Jingles with, and she does, and then he's just kind of like, "Whatever." And then I presume he... Like, they show him stabbing someone, and then no one is really that stabbed in the next scene.
Yeah.
You know?
It's confusing. Like, later, Birdie's all injured and stuff, but, like, and but it seems like she got stabbed between things, you know what I mean? So, like, it doesn't really follow what's happening.
The stabbing is also, like, a cutaway to, like, a very, very, very close shot of, like, only a torso with, like, what I assume is Chef Birdie's jacket, like, being stabbed over and over again. And I'm like, did you guys forget to put a scene of Birdie getting stabbed in? So you had to, like, do a scene where you're stabbing a fake torso, and that's why it's so close up and like we can't tell who it is, because like I would have believed you, like, if you had Birdie show up and was like, I got stabbed, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. Stabby McKees was here like 2 seconds ago, so that would make sense. Yeah. That you got stabbed.
Yeah, you don't have to explain how someone got stabbed when Johnny Shanks was in the scene before with them. We can figure it out.
Yeah, Actively trying to stab people. Yeah.
Oh man. So after knocking both of them out, presumably, and stabbing Birdie, he turns on one of the big ovens they have, which why does she have that?
Yeah.
She's making peanut butter sandwiches. Like, why does she have an industrial kitchen oven? This was like a kids camp that was abandoned for like multiple years. Like, she has like a high end pizza oven back there. Like, right. What are we doing? Why does she have that shit?
Right.
I'm making a pizza, says Chef Birdie to Mr. Jingles as he walks in.
Margaret, I need you to pay me, but only in a big ass pizza oven. Mamma mia.
And no cheese, just how you like it, Mr. Jingles, you little weirdo. Anyway.
Here's your pizza. None pizza left, beef, just the way you like it, buddy.
And it's an oven that is explicitly big enough to fit Xavier in it, which is like a pretty fucking big oven, because Xavier's not like a small man. Xavier's like a
he's a
pretty,
grown man.
Yeah, he's a pretty big boy. Like, he's not like a kid. Like, he definitely is not regular oven sized. Like, and he's got like room to move, because when it pans to him, he's like crouched in it. And I'm like, did he put you in there in that position? Like, if not, that means you had enough room to like move to that position, which
maneuver.
Means you could probably kick the door open. If I was taking a wild stab in the dark, I would think you probably could kick the door open.
That's the thing, because he struggles with it, and it's like, but there's nothing that would, like, keep an oven like that. You know what I mean? Like, and
he jammed, like, a ladle in the handle was the idea, but it opens from the inside, so, like, I don't know why it would, yeah.
Like, I get that here's the thing, I get the idea, like, that he jury-rigs the cover shut. Mr. Jingles, we'll see later, did this, you know, where, like, you can't open from the outside, but he did it with, like, a soup ladle, like, a metal soup ladle, which, like, it was, like, a really thin piece of metal. Like, if you were really banging, like, a door open to save your life, like, you could fucking bend this thing, it's great, like, get out of here, Xavier's not that wimpy, like, come on.
Also, I know that it's like there's already a lot of really improbable things going on, like, for example, putting a grown man in an oven. But like at the same time, if it would have panned to this scene, because like we don't see him drag Xavier to the oven, we just like see the aftermath. I would have believed you if like you panned to it and there was like a chain around the handle of the oven and a padlock. I'd be like, yeah, you're telling me Keys McGeorge had a padlock on him? That makes sense. He's got a lot of keys. It would make sense that he had a lock
on
him.
He loves that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would believe you.
Oh, man.
Also,
and then just, when he locks someone up to kill him, he eats the keys.
Yeah.
That's why he needs to keep finding more. Yeah.
And I know Mr. Jingles isn't the best at this, but isn't the poetic justice to put Birdie in the oven? Because he doesn't. Like, Xavier's just some guy, she's the chef, right? Like that. Like, you don't have to be Jigsaw to make the connection on that one. I think even Jason Voorhees could handle that, and he's like basically a strong zombie, you know. Like,
but time to bake Xavier, I guess. Also, the oven's on, and he's like able to like move around and yell, and I'm like, I don't know, because like I'm not gonna Google it because I'm not gonna get put on a list, but like, I don't know that the heat would be what kills you in the oven. Like, I would think that, like, suffocation would be what kills you in the oven if, like, it's that sealed.
Oh, yeah,
I would
the gas think that the coming in, right?
Well, yeah, the gas burner being pumped in plus, like, no ventilation. Like, yeah. I would think that's what would kill you, not, like, getting hot.
So, I think it's just like he put it to broiler, and I think it's just like an electric broiler at the top, which is even stranger for an oven of that size.
It might as well be a tanning bed. Like,
yeah, like he puts his jacket over his head and is like shielded from it temporarily, which it's like, that's wild.
You know, his clothes don't catch on fire, by the way. His clothes do not catch on fire during this.
And Jingles doesn't even stick around. So it's almost, it's also just like, you know, like I've seen this movie before, you know, like, yeah, like, have you actually done that before? Like you're doing this like really violent, cruel thing. Like you might as well enjoy it if that's why
you're
doing it.
Or at least make sure it works. At least make sure that like it like happens and it like isn't easily foiled.
And we're going to find out, like, he didn't even finish killing Birdie, really. Like, this is just sloppy work on Jingles' part. You know what I mean? Like,
he
dude,
had to go finish his sandwich.
Yeah, you got to finish your food, exactly. But no, yeah, there it's just this, it's just all half-assed, you know. God, between him and Ramirez, it's like we can't even get one decent killer between the two of them. Jesus.
Don't worry, Slow Beef. There's more killers in this show, it turns out. There's like so many of them.
Yeah. I know they're all going to be in on it by the end of it.
And in the next episode, we're going to get to see that one of them was secretly fucking Trapper Dead by Daylight.
Yeah.
Who just like had a bunch of like traps, like literally bear traps all over the premises and was like, oh yeah, I just did that. When? I did. What do you mean you did? I did.
Don't worry about
it.
What
do you want?
And that's
how did you set up a giant net? Like, what do you mean? You set up a net?
One of them's just like an Ewok trap, like from Star Wars. Just like, how did you make that? Like,
it's literally fucking Rocket Raccoon log trap. It's insane.
Like, even if it was Jingles, it's like, I don't really know that he could do that. And then it's like,
where'd
wait,
you get
you
the materials to make this? When did you have time?
Like, wait, were you
a lot of nails?
Were you a veteran? Like, what's going on? But, all right.
Yeah, wait, why do you know how to do that? Yeah, great point. Well, okay, you're going to have to listen next time to find out who inexplicably knows how to make the log trap from Rocket Raccoon. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Have a great night.
Bye.